Welcome into a brand new episode of Calling It, recording Monday, February 8th, top of the 1 o'clock hour here in Boston. I'm Alex Barth, joined as always by Alex Lovewitz. We're powered by CLNS Media. It is, of course, Super Bowl Monday. We're going to get into the game itself, everything around the game, the narratives, maybe touch on a couple NFL storylines elsewhere at the end. But first off, Lovewitz, a happy Super Bowl Monday to you. A bittersweet day. Because the Super Bowl, as rough as that game was last night at times, is always fun. But now we enter, I did the math last night. I think it was 154 days until training camp begins. So 154 days without football.
Yeah, now we get to focus on basketball and hockey. And those seasons will start to heat up, which is something to look forward to.
No interest in baseball, huh?
I mean, baseball, it's pitchers and catchers. Today's truck day. Yay.
It's truck day?
I think so. And
the truck once threatened to run over friend of the show, Matt McCarthy, on Twitter.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. McCarthy was trash talking truck day, and the truck replied and said, "Say that to my grill." That's an explicit threat to me.
It seems like one. He should press charges. But yeah, I mean, this is football season is really the best of all of what sports has to offer, if you ask me, and I know you'll obviously agree with me on that one. It sucks, but with that comes an off season, and as we've seen with many other leagues, the off season can be full of drama and intrigue, and you know it really has already started with over the past few weeks with Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford, and now other players are being shopped, and there's going to be a lot of turnover throughout the league. So the end of a season, a COVID season that, you know, went through, we're here, we made it, we're now done. But now we have the beginning of an off season that I think is going to be an entertaining one as well.
Let's get back to the game though, before we get on to the off season. And we talked about this last week, kind of wondering what it might end up looking like for Brady to win a Super Bowl, not in a Patriots uniform, for us who grew up in New England watching him. And I got to say, I wasn't as upset as I thought. There were some weird moments of closure I wasn't expecting during the game. There was one in the opening montage where Brady's mom said he still sometimes accidentally says, "Let's go Patriots," and then catches himself. That was closure. And I wasn't expecting to hear that, but that certainly was closure, and I was surprised to hear that. The other one was the Patriots at the end of the game tweeting congratulations to the greatest of all time. I was not expecting that. And frankly, if you told me the Patriots are going to tweet at the end of the game, I would think it would bum me out. But I felt an insane amount of closure from that. So I was able to enjoy it. I was able to celebrate it. I watched Brady win a Super Bowl when I was 6. I watched him win a Super Bowl when I was 26. How many people can say that about their childhood quarterback, right? I was tempted to. We're in a group chat with some college friends, a lot of whom are from New York, and I was tempted to ask them what their favorite team's quarterback when they were 6 years old is doing right now, right? So I might actually do that still, but
yeah, what's Chad Pennington up to?
Right, exactly. So I was actually able to enjoy it. It was definitely weird. There was definitely a weird element to it. It was definitely bittersweet, but I wasn't as bothered by it as I thought I was going to be. There was certainly closure. And the same goes for the MVP as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was rooting for him. I'm not ashamed to say it. I was looking forward to it. I think I look at the end of his Patriots era a lot differently than most people do. I think it was just a relationship between him and Belichick that had run its course. Of course, I've made this point a bunch. But I wanted him to win. I was rooting for them. Was I rooting for Tom Brady and the Buccaneers the way I root for the Patriots? No. But I root for the guy's legacy. He's, you know, a childhood hero. For me, it's him and like Pedro Martinez, the two guys I grew up idolizing. And the fact that in 2021, he wins a Super Bowl, it's incredible. And I think if anything, stepping back from the Patriots fandom and seeing him do this on a different team, it helps you appreciate the greatness of that individual. And obviously the 6 rings he had in New England, it's a team effort. But it's Tom Brady. He won you a lot of games, and he's obviously the best quarterback, best football player to ever live. So, I mean, I just appreciate it. And I was very happy for him and Rob Gronkowski as well in that team. It was not the most entertaining game, really lopsided. I think most people were surprised, but I'm not complaining about the result. I'm glad that Brady added to his legacy and now has further established himself as the best football player to ever live.
Oh, I keep people seeing Brady cemented his legacy. I mean, there's layers of cement on top of that thing, right? Yes, it wasn't. Yeah. And I guess we can use this to transfer into the game. The narrative going in all week was what does this mean for Brady's legacy if he loses, right? People talked about the tiebreaker between him and Mahomes, and people talking about, Mahomes potentially catching him. They're already projecting down the road 4, 5, 6 rings. And if he, like, I saw people saying, if he ends up with 6, granted, you're gifting him 5 in that conversation. If he ends up with 6 and Brady is 7, but he is the head-to-head, like, so that was the narrative going in. I feel like, and this probably isn't fair, because Mahomes was not good last night, but he didn't get any favors from the offensive line. They were atrocious. But I feel like the narrative and the narratives don't usually use context, but we're going to discuss the narrative. We're going to discuss people discussing the narrative here. That's the context I want to talk about this in. Because Mahomes he was fighting a losing battle last night. But I think a lot of people are going to look at that game and the Mahomes baby goat talk, and we'll get into a little bit why that's obnoxious. But he didn't show up last night. He didn't. And I think people are going to talk about that at least until he wins another one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not blaming him for that loss at all. I think the defense for Tampa Bay has been underestimated this entire postseason. They played phenomenally. Great game plan from Todd Bowles and company, obviously. And they took advantage of a weakened offensive line, and they took Tyreek Hill out of the game. When you do those two things, Patrick Mahomes is going to have a tough time. And he tried to extend plays. He tried to make stuff happen, but it just wasn't there. So, on the list of reasons why the Chiefs lost, he's way, way, way down it. And in regard to, like, the comparison talk, I think people often forget that Tom Brady didn't really have that second spark of his career until he was 36, 37. You can't guess that that's going to happen to any one player. But I think you can make an educated assumption that a guy like Patrick Mahomes, who's taken as much of a beating as he has during his short career, probably isn't going to have the longevity that someone like Tom Brady has had, which I think, pretty much ruins that conversation. For me, it seems relatively impossible that he'll ever come close to catching Tom Brady. But the reality is he's 25 years old. He's got a long way to go. And he might go down as a top three quarterback of all time. Probably will. But to compare him to Tom Brady right now, I just think that's sports talk fodder. And that is somewhat disrespectful to the legacy of Tom Brady, because he's accomplished so much more than the guy. I'm not confused by it. I think it's predictable. But at the end of the day, it's a useless conversation, because there is no argument here. There is none. And I think there wasn't any before yesterday's game. There definitely isn't any after last night's game. And I think you're going to have to wait until he at least wins a few more to start talking about him in that context.
Right. I mean, people want to project it out. And look, it is fair. You have a guy who's off to as hot of a start as any quarterback in history, right? If you want to project him being one of the all-time greats, that's fair. How often do we get two of the all-time greats in the Super Bowl? That's rare, right? We never got Brady Rodgers. We never got Brady Breeze. We did get Breeze Manning. I don't think we never got Manning Rodgers. And those, I know we got Rodgers, Ben, but Ben's a step down from that group, right? And Brady's really above them all, but those three are all kind of in the same group. And they met each other once. Breeze Manning, that would have been whatever it was, the Saints won that Super Bowl. So I understand kind of wanting to appreciate in the moment, like, what that game meant historically. And obviously Mahomes has accomplished a lot of what he's going to accomplish. So you do have to project to make that moment kind of live up to its historical context. So I'm fine with that, but you're right. Some of the projecting about how, it could impact the legacies and this and that was totally unfair to both sides. It was unfair to Mahomes because you're putting expectations on him that he hasn't earned, and you're downplaying Brady because you're assuming one guy's going to accomplish what Brady already has and what should be generational, and that feels light, but generational accomplishments. But let's move on from the narratives now to why Patrick Mahomes wasn't good. And this is going to be forever and ever and ever the least talked about element of the or the most undue ignored element of the Super Bowl, and that's the Tampa defense. They were outstanding. They were dominant. They were all over the field, constantly in the backfield. I think I saw something. Mahomes was pressured on like 48 dropbacks, and I know the Chiefs' offensive line was banged up, and a lot of people underestimated that. I underestimated just how much of a difference that would make. I didn't think they would be that bad. I thought they might struggle at times. I didn't think they would be that bad. But, I mean, he didn't. And again, Mahomes didn't do himself any favors, I think. Mm-hmm. But there were plays where he just didn't have a chance. I mean, he's run around like a chicken with his head cut off because, you know, he gets the snap and he already has a guy in his face.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the coaching for Tampa Bay was obviously incredible. I think the coaching for the Chiefs did Patrick Mahomes and that team a disservice. They just came out and they were out tough. They were, you know, out physical. They were outmatched in every department, especially in coaching. And the game plan they had going in worked as well as it could have. To not allow a touchdown from the most high-powered offense in the NFL, one of the most high-powered offense you'll ever see in football, with all those weapons, all those targets, you know, forget about Eric Fisher for a second. Even without him, that's a great team, a great offense. And they were held to 9 points. 9 points. It really is incredible. I think the most impressive part of this Tampa Bay team, that defense specifically, but also the team, is they got better as the season went on, just exponentially. It seems like week in and week out, they came in and they improved from the prior week. And this postseason was a perfect example of that. You go through Breeze, Rodgers, then Mahomes. And it wasn't Tom Brady who won you those games. He played well. He did what he had to do. It was that defense that won you those games. And that includes last night, obviously. So, I mean, my biggest takeaway is just Todd Bowles. He should have been the MVP of that game. And really that defense was so underestimated all year long. And it ended up being the biggest asset on that team, despite the fact that they had probably one of the most stacked offenses, at least on paper, in the NFL. So just unbelievable. I feel somewhat bad for Patrick Mahomes. I don't think that game's on him whatsoever. I think
he didn't do himself any favors. He's going to get more blame than he should, but he didn't do himself any favors.
Maybe not. But I think it's hard to get into a rhythm when you're under pressure that much. And I don't care if you're Patrick Mahomes or
that's been like the hallmark of his career, is that pressure's never, even when he is, and I know it was more than he's ever faced, but he's part of what's the reason when you go in and you talk about trying to put him on the same level as Brady, you're doing that because he does things nobody else has ever done. A trademark, one of those things is
evading pressure
and not letting pressure face him. So if you want to have the GOAT conversation about Patrick Mahomes, then, you know, he didn't show anything last night. And great, again, it wasn't easy. I'm not saying it's fully on him. But when you want to talk about him as, you know, the best quarterback of the next generation, the best quarterback of the post-Brady generation, when you want to crown him that already, and I don't necessarily think that that's going to be an incorrect assessment when it's all said and done. We'll see what Trevor Lawrence looks like. But if you want to crown Mahomes that, the traits that he possesses that are the reason you're going to crown him that, he didn't show last night.
Yeah, he's a guy who extends plays, and then you look at Brady, he's a guy who just makes quick decisions when under pressure like that. And he's gotten better at that throughout his career also. I mean, to be fair to Patrick Mahomes, did he have an amazing game? No, he didn't. They also were expecting, you know, man-to-man the entire game, and, you know, Tampa Bay predominantly was in zone. And it doesn't seem like they ever adjusted effectively. They didn't adjust effectively, as we saw. But maybe that's something that he can work on and get better at, like we saw with Brady throughout his career. So, you know, does he deserve some blame? Sure, but he could have been on his game, and still I don't think that the game's within a score. I think that Tampa Bay still wins by a decent margin, given the fact that they just had a good game plan. They were hitting hard. They were playing fast. They're playing tough. They looked healthy, and they just took advantage of these mismatches, especially, you know, with their pass rush. So, Yeah, I mean, he deserves some blame. He's the face of that organization. It comes with the territory when you have the reputation of somebody like Patrick Mahomes. But overall, I he could have had a lot more help. Could have had a lot more help. And we both know this isn't going to be the last time that he's in that position, or in the Super Bowl, that is.
It shouldn't be. I do want to, because you mentioned the Bucs coaching. And look, I think Todd Bowles is great. I think he had a great game plan. I talked about this on this show. I talked about it in a bunch of shows leading up to the game. You have to, in that situation, when you're the Bucs, if you want to win that game, you have to recognize you're not the better team. You have to do things differently than you've been doing them all season. Todd Bowles totally broke his mold, didn't blitz a ton, was able to get pressure with the front four. He was outstanding. One of my lasting, maybe my number one lasting memory from this game, though, will be going into the half. And the Chiefs punt the ball. The Bucs get the ball at good field position. They were around the 40, I think. And they have a minute left. They had one timeout. Again, Tom Brady's their quarterback. So that's light work for field goal at least, right? And it was still a close game at this point. It was a one-score game. It was 14-6 at this point. And Andy Reid calls a run. Bruce Arians calls a run. Bruce Arians calls a run, two-yard run, and the Bucs start standing around. They were ready to go into the half up 14-6 on the Patrick Mahomes, the Kansas City Chiefs. It wasn't until Andy Reid called a timeout, because he realizes how dumb it is what the Bucs are doing. And he thinks, oh, if they're just going to run the clock out, maybe I get my superstar quarterback out there and I put together a drill and I get this thing closer going into the half. Now, that was ultimately dumb because you don't want to give Tom Brady any extra time. Even when you have Patrick Mahomes, Brady's no slouch. And Brady, if you give him the time, he's not going to leave you time for Patrick Mahomes. He's not going to do it. So that was dumb by Andy Reid. But so Bruce Arians wants to go into the half up 14-6. Andy Reid bails him out. Bucs drive down the field. 13 seconds left. No timeouts. Risky. Sure. Andy Reid wants to kick a field goal. Brady yells the field goal team off the field, throws a touchdown. And that, to me, that was it. There was no coming back from that.
You're forgetting one thing. They on third down, or second down, they got it to like third and two or third and one. And then the Chiefs called another timeout.
Right. Like, Andy Reid. Well, so that's what I meant. Like, Andy Reid is trying to get the ball back.
Yeah. And it was just so dumb because you're at about midfield and it's third and two. They need, you need 15 yards to get into field goal range, right? Essentially.
It's not Josh Allen or Baker Mayfield on the other side anymore, Andy.
Yeah, and even if it was, that would be a somewhat dumb decision. You got to quit with your head, at least. If they're going to give you, I understand you want to have momentum going into the half. They wouldn't have had time to really make a play, I don't think, or score, rather. You would have had 45 seconds.
They have Mahomes, they have Tyreek Hill. But, again, you have Mahomes, you have Tyreek Hill. You don't need to chase possessions.
Exactly. If you're down one score, then you're getting the ball back in the second half.
Right. That was the other thing. They were getting the ball back. So that was dumb for Reid. But again, I want to remind everybody, and I never want to forget this, because this has maybe been the most frustrating thing to me about watching Brady in Tampa, has been that clown of a coach that everybody – we have to hear everybody say how much he likes Arians better than Belichick. And look, maybe he does. Maybe, he's 43. He's been around the block. He knows what he's doing. He doesn't need a hard ass pushing his buttons. I get that. But then you have these idiots who can't differentiate between Brady likes playing for Arians better than Belichick and Arians is a better coach than Belichick. And that's not true. Bruce Arians, not a good head coach. And I want everybody to remember, with the greatest quarterback of all time, and not just the greatest quarterback of all time, but specifically the greatest quarterback of all time in the two-minute drill, with a minute left and one timeout, in the Super Bowl against Patrick Mahomes, up just one score, Bruce Arians was ready to go into the half. And then he was ready to kick a field goal. He was ready to settle. And he got bailed out twice, once by Andy Reid and once by Brady chewing his ass out. I don't want anybody to forget that. And Bruce Arians, he said after the game, he said in his speech that he didn't do crap. And I know he's trying to look humble or whatever, but he's right. That team, as they did all season, won that game in spite of him, not because of him. Tom Brady is the quarterback, the coach, and the GM of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Don't get yourself twisted.
But doesn't that make him even more of the anti-Belichick? Because I think that is a skill, by the way. I think the people deserve
being
credit.
Being a bad coach?
No. Not being a bad coach. Being a delegator, to put it kindly. To be somebody who trusts his staff. And not to say that Belichick doesn't trust his staff, but he's obviously way more hands-on than someone like Bruce Arians is.
Bruce Arians made the wrong decision. He made what should have been a monumentally bad decision and got bailed out. I'm not gonna crown him for it. I'm not gonna twist it. If you want to twist it and figure out some way where it's a positive personality trait, be my guest.
Mm-hmm.
If they had lost the game, the first 10 minutes of this show would have been me yelling about what a dumbass decision that was.
And that's not like that decision making in that specific point, that's bad. That's wrong. Should obviously have gone for it. I ended up doing that again, deferring to Brady and be like, all right, we'll do it. So he went against his gut essentially. But still, the game plan was phenomenal. And so if you're going to blame him for that one decision
but that would be Byron Leftwich, who to be fair, I've always been critical of, but I'm talking about the in-game coaching. Some of the as much as they won by, and it was kind of out of hand halfway through the third quarter, so we didn't get a ton of it. But some of the in-game coaching decisions were dumb. Another one on the – and ultimately it doesn't end up mattering because Tom Brady's that good. But, you know, the play on the goal line, right, with Ronald Jones on fourth down. You have Leonard Fournette's good at one thing. I think Leonard Fournette's wildly overrated. But if you need two yards, he'll get you 2 yards. Right, he's a big, powerful guy.
Yeah.
Why is Leonard Fournette not in the game right there? Like, just – in game, the game plan was good on both sides of the ball. All the credit in the world to Byron Leftwich, all the credit in the world, especially Todd Bowles. I think they need to open it up to giving coaches and coordinators Super Bowl MVPs, because Todd Bowles was the real MVP last night. But some of the coaching decisions, the stuff that comes from the head coach, brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Yeah, I mean, you could point to a few instances. That goal line situation, definitely one of them. You get it. First and goal, you're at the 1 yard line on second. You're at the 1 yard line on third and fourth, I think it was. I don't understand why they didn't go with Leonard Fournette there, now that you mention it. Good thing for them, it didn't end up mattering. But overall, if you're weighing the positives and negatives of the coaching performance, it's easy to say Todd Bowles did great. Byron Leftwich did great. The game plan was awesome. I just don't think you can specifically credit them without crediting Bruce Arians. And that's coming from somebody like you who's been very critical of Bruce Arians this season. But you have to give credit where it's due. And overall, the coaching was part of what won them that game, if not most of what won them that game. And you got to credit the head coach for at least putting them in that position, for at least trusting his staff the way that he did. And having his team prepared enough to execute the game plan as well as they did. So I'm crediting him. You know, I've been crapping on the guy all year. There's a couple instances in that game you could point at and say, what are you doing here? And I think you can say that for Bruce Arians more than a lot of coaches, for sure. But overall, they won. They throttled the Chiefs. And it's pretty impressive to see, you know, just how effective they were in that game.
Yeah, I'm still, again, Bruce Arians blamed Tom Brady after week one for 2 interceptions that blatantly were not Brady's fault. He set the rules. I'm just following them. I can blame whoever I want. So I think that, you know, he got bailed out by Tom Brady. He got bailed out by that defense, and he got bailed out by Mahomes having a bad foot. That team won that game in spite of him, not because of him. But let's keep going. Let's talk about, you got any more takes on the game itself, or do you want to move on to the festivities that are the Super Bowl?
I mean, the only other thing I can think of that stuck out to me, I forgot to bring this up before when we were prepping, Tyrann Mathieu.
Yes, good call.
And that whole thing with him going at Brady, talking crap, and then Brady talking crap back at him. And then Tyrann Mathieu, he deleted this tweet, but he sent out a tweet saying, I'm not going to repeat what he called me, which is just, he probably called him a bitch. And that's what I was talking to a friend about that.
Maybe a word with a P, maybe.
Maybe. But not, you can say that on a football field. Why? You can't say that. That's the word you will not repeat. Really? That's a word you won't repeat. That's pretty soft. Also, you understand that when you say that sort of thing, the insinuation, at least in a lot of people's mind, isn't to go directly to those two words, bitch or pussy. It's to go to another word that's far more severe, that's far more offensive, and you know, that would make somebody look a lot worse than they rightfully should. So I found that whole thing to be...
Well, you mentioned he deleted the tweet, right?
He did delete it.
Yeah. So, and I'll give you some breaking news on the pre-recorded podcast from ESPN, Jenna Lane. Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback Tom Brady apologized to Chiefs safety Tyrann Mathieu via text message. So he did. And look, those are two. Obviously, I love watching Brady. I've loved Tyrann Mathieu since he was at LSU. The dude's a dog. He's a gamer. Apex competitor. He's nasty out there on the field. Take no prisoners. So you get two guys like that going up against each other in a game with stakes like the Super Bowl. Yeah, something's going to blow up. I wasn't surprised to see that. I just thought it was a powerful, powerful competitive moment. I wouldn't have flagged either of them. I thought, you know, let them jaw. That's what the Super Bowl is. It's competition. You're right. The tweet was worded poorly. It looks like he's inferring, like you mentioned, a certain word. But then he talks about how he still has respect for Brady, which people wouldn't have taken that context. But he's not going to add that if that was the word Brady said. I can't imagine he would. So, yeah, Brady probably called him a bitch or something. He wasn't happy about it. Heat of the moment. I think it's all blown up. I think you just had two competitive guys being competitive, and that's what it is. That's all it is to me.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we're in the world of sportsmanship and participation trophies, and you got to be best friends with your opponent, right? All these like all these guys in sports are all buddies with each other now on social media, and they hang out in the off season. I miss it when athletes legitimately hated each other. And I'm not saying Brady and Tyrann Mathieu legitimately hate each other. They obviously don't. Brady apologized to him, but they did in that moment. That was kind of cool. Get the blood boiling a little bit. There's a lot at stake here. Get a little nasty. It's all for that.
It's football. You know, that stuff, it happens on the field. I just think it's bad taste to bring that stuff off of the field and air your grievances on social media. And the way he did, and I think in hindsight, he probably regrets it. You know, Tyrann Mathieu is somebody who I think has a quick emotional trigger. At least if you look at his history, it seems like a guy who is very competitive, you know, very into the game. To his credit, and I think that his emotions got the best of him in the aftermath of that loss. And I can understand that to a point, but still, you got somebody's reputation that you're throwing shots at essentially when you tweet stuff like that, and it just wasn't great. And I mean, is that not the one thing that epitomizes Brady? The fact that he draws at somebody like that during the game, after the game, reaches out, hey man. Hope all is well. I respect you. Yada yada yada. That seems like a Brady way. So
right, it's all between the lines.
It's all between the lines, exactly. And then you had Patrick Mahomes' wife and mother going off on Twitter. I love Patrick Mahomes. I think he's a great player. I have a lot of respect for him. I can't stand his family. I'm sorry.
Were you the one who tweeted? Somebody tweeted because they made this point last night. Like his mom was tweeting, his girlfriend's tweeting, his brother's a lunatic, all that. Somebody was like, how Patrick Mahomes ended up just like this normal, humble guy with that family is beyond me.
It's perplexing to me. I don't understand.
Was that you who said that? I forget who said that.
I did not tweet that, but it's an astute observation. I like the fact that he is so likable and seems like such an even keel guy, considering the, you know, especially considering the fact that he is a massive celebrity, and the fact that he surrounds himself with these people, it's crazy. It's crazy to me. I don't understand it at all. And if anything, it makes me respect him more. Like you've escaped, although you know, decision making might not be great there in picking his wife. Anyway, I don't want to get too personal, but yeah, that annoyed me. And because like it wasn't even saying the refs blew the game; it's tagging Gisele Bündchen in it. Like, what does she have to do with that?
Clout. That's all it is. She's chasing clout.
Yeah, it's just silly. It's and then she tweets out Tom Brady's parents were so nice to us. And then shut up. You're trying to save face because you tweet some stupid stuff. Just moronic. Really annoyed me.
All right, let's do some fun Brady stats and then we'll get into the pageantry of the game. Here's the big one. Obviously, Tom Brady has more Super Bowls than any franchise in NFL history. So here's one. And I said I wanted to talk about the title of GOAT. We might get into that in a little bit. But we might need to retire franchise quarterback because having more Super Bowls than any NFL franchise, right? So now there's franchise quarterback and there's franchise quarterback. Right? You got me on that one.
Yeah.
Couple other cool ones I had last night. Brady has more Super Bowl MVPs than any other quarterback has rings.
Mm-hmm.
And his Super Bowl MVPs are tied for as much as any player, because Charles Haley is five.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I got a couple. There's one that
That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to duel these back and forth. So yeah.
There's one, and I don't have this in front of me. I think I'm getting it right though. If you just count Super Bowls and conference championship games, Brady has 17 wins in both of those games alone, which is one more than the second on the list, Joe Montana. So just in those two games, he would be number two. Also,
in terms of playoff wins.
Playoff wins.
You're saying, okay.
Also, playoff wins beyond the age of 37. He is 16. So if you just take his career beyond the age of 37, he is tied with Joe Montana for the second most playoff wins in NFL history. Just remarkable.
And he'll likely get at least one more. So he'll separate himself from that. So this was me subtweeting some of the Bills fans we went to college with. Tom Brady could pull a 90s Bills, lose four straight Super Bowls, he'd still be 500 in the Super Bowl all the time. And then here's my this is my last one. And then if you have one more, I got two more. So if you have one, go ahead.
I have one.
All right, these are more longevity ones. So this was John Ehrlichman on Twitter last night. Excuse me. Some businesses that advertised during Tom Brady's first Super Bowl. You ready?
Yep, please.
AOL, Blockbuster.
Oh my God.
Radio Shack, Circuit wow. City, Hot Jobs, Yahoo, Gateway Computers, and this was my favorite, Sears. Wow. When's the last time you were like, yeah, I'm gonna go down to Sears? I wonder if Sears has what I need. That's all the companies that all these Yahoos on Wall Street are betting on, all the dead companies. Right?
No, all the Yahoos on Reddit. Not Wall Street.
Right, exactly. Street I'm surprised, like what's missing from this list? I mean, you have Blockbuster on there. That's a pretty solid one. You have Radio Shack. I'm trying to think. What are the other I guess AOL's AI.
AOL's, I mean, that's a bit black. Imagine like Nokia or BlackBerry.
BlackBerry wasn't even a thing yet. Yeah.
No, BlackBerry came and went after that.
I think in my house when Brady won his first, we still had our hardwired phone, like our wall phone. But yeah, I don't know. Oldsmobile maybe should be on there. Pontiac.
I have a Pontiac now. So I'm in the past as well.
This was my favorite one. You ready? Because the Montreal Gazette, and shout out to them, because they teach you this in journalism. You always look for the local angle, right? Montreal Gazette headline. Former Montreal Expos draft pick wins Super Bowl named MVP. Love that. So then I had to do some digging. The Expos haven't existed for 16 years. They played their last game 16 years ago, October 2004. They still have a draft pick winning championships. And then on top of that, wait, go ahead, and then I'll give the second half.
And I wonder, is there anyone who was drafted in their last year or within the last few years of the Expos existence that is still even in the MLB?
So here you go. So I thought maybe Bartolo Colon. He's pitching down in Mexico.
Oh, wow.
But there is one Expos draft pick left that is still playing from their last year. You're right, 2004. That would be go ahead.
Colorado Rocky. No, I'm not going to get it. Who is it?
Colorado Rockies. I think he's the second baseman. He's moved around. Ian Desmond.
He opted
out last year, but he's going to play this year. Ian Desmond, who's a good player, good serviceable player, right?
Yeah.
So Ian Desmond is 35 years old. He was drafted in 2004. Tom Brady is 43. He was drafted by the Expos in 1995. Does he outlast Ian Desmond as the last Expos draft pick?
Oh, yeah, I think definitely. That's another thing we didn't even discuss. And I think this conversation, by the way, has just ceased to exist because people are like, he'll retire when he retires. But this idea like, oh, he's done at 45, which he has said. But I think like Belichick, when he was talking about coaching into his 70s back in 2011, his perspective's probably shifted and he's probably not considering doing that as of yet. Are retiring before 70 as of yet. And Brady, I think it's the same thing. I don't think next year is his last season. And I think most people would probably agree with me on that, which is crazy how he has just played so well that he has halted all of those conversations, despite the fact that he's going into a season in which he'll be 44 years old. Crazy. So he's going to be around for at least two more years, if you ask me.
And I would also just, again, I want to throw it out there. They keep an eye on Ian Desmond now.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. All right. Pageantry, the game, I guess, is a weird one because of the pandemic and everything. Well, first off, what'd you eat?
So we have a smoker in my place, the Shadow Traeger. So we had some ribs, some wings, and smoked turkey. And if you're not a fan of turkey, a lot of people hate on turkey. You got to try smoked turkey. I think it will change your mind on turkey. Like 100%, I think you'll do a 180. Mm-hmm. If you're not a turkey guy and you get a turkey leg, or you get any type of turkey that's been on the smoker, specifically dark meat, that's my preference personally, you will be turned. You will be turned. It's delicious. So it was ribs, pork ribs, chicken wings, turkey.
Yeah, so I actually did the wings earlier in the day because we weren't gonna cook wings. It was my parents. So we ordered wings, actually ate those during the Celtics game. And then for the game, nachos, and I made barbecue beer chili. We had some apps, you know, some egg rolls, whatever, but chili game for me. And that was good. That ended up working out really well. Let's talk about the music now. You got to talk about the music. I thought all the pregame stuff, right? I was super excited for Eric Church, but can we talk about her and God Bless America and what she did with that guitar? I mean, outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
That was the soundtrack for the credits at the end of the movie that is America.
Yeah, it was good. I thought both, you know, the national anthem and what's the other one? America the Beautiful, whatever the hell the song name is. They were good. They were good. I don't get all that hyped up about the music. I just,
you know, I mean, the anthem was cool because it wasn't like the anthem. Like, they turned it into like blues. They turned it into a genre. Jasmine Sullivan and Eric Church. And I'm like, I would listen to that song as a song. Like, that didn't sound like the anthem. It sounded just like a song, like a duet. It was really good.
You know, I'm going to be honest. I like, when I look back on like pregame national anthems and whatnot, I like to look back on like the World Series at like Fenway. And, you know, so a lot of people hate James Taylor and his renditions, and he's had one or two that aren't great, but usually I'm a fan, you know,
like the traditional.
I like the tradition. I think they get too flashy. Unless you're Jimi Hendrix, you know.
So then, how do you feel about? First off, how do you feel about Whitney Houston's?
Whitney Houston's was great because it was just her voice, and I just think she killed it so much that it's like, all right, that's
well. Then, so my other question, because this is my favorite one, they do on Thanksgiving, the guy at the Cowboys game who just does it with the trumpet, and it's just the one trumpet, and that's it.
It's simple is better, in my opinion.
I do love that one.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. And then halftime, I thought, honestly, my dad had the best summation of the halftime show. He said, I usually don't look forward to the weekend ending. But it was what it was. It's the weekend. It's safe. You know, it's safe, not really controversial pop, generic background music. That's all it is. That's all it was. You got a good meme out of it. YouTube still remains
hit. Yeah, I mean, I didn't like it. I thought it was bad. I'm also not a huge fan of Weeknd. I think he's got a good voice when you have post-production involved. I don't like his music all that much. I think he's got a couple catchy songs. I find it odd how they – I Can't Feel My Face, that song, he plays that. That's clearly about drugs. And everyone's like, yeah, whatever. But it's like so obviously about drugs. And
but it's like hidden. It's safe for the moms, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Like my mom was asking me, she said she never heard of The Weeknd, and I basically described him as Bruno Mars was like the safe pop option, but then he got busted in like a coke bust or something, so The Weeknd just kind of filled his role.
Yeah, and he was also in Uncut Gems. That's another one. The Weeknd was in Uncut Gems. Yeah.
I try not to remember that movie as much as I liked it. I try not to think about it.
Yeah, it was intense. He's the one what's his name? Adam Sandler's mistress was cheating on him with.
Oh, right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
He also looks older than I remember. So, like, it wasn't as charming. And then there was, like, the part where he goes, like, into the stage, like, into the back area with all those mirrors.
Right.
Like, he's in a funhouse. And he has that camera that he's moving back. And, like, I got vertigo. It was not visually appealing. Well,
that part was the meme, right? That was the...
Yeah. And it makes for good meme material that was murdered within, you know, 15 minutes. But it was... It was horrible looking. It was bad. So I don't know. It takes a lot for me to be impressed by those halftime shows. And they always choose musicians who are solely pop based. And I understand the logic behind it, but I wish they'd mix it up a little bit more and go with some old school people to appease, you know, not just the younger crowd or the moms or whatever.
Well, it used to be for a while there was whoever did the anthem ended up doing the halftime show next year. I don't know how many people would like it if Eric Church did the halftime show. I would be thrilled.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Eric Church guy, but I think it would be a nice change of pace at the very least.
It really should. Like, remember last year or 2 years ago when it was in Atlanta and it wasn't – like, it should have been Outkast and everybody knew it should have been Outkast, but it was Maroon 5, right?
Well,
like,
they had Big Boy. The thing is –
yeah, it should have been Outkast.
Big Boy is Outkast. He's half of it.
But he did, like, one song. No, my point is, like – so, right, when it's in LA in a couple years, like, at Green Day. Right. They're from there. That would be really cool. You know, when it's in, get local acts, get somebody, the Super Bowl, you know, it's supposed to be a celebration of the city as part of it.
Yeah. Houston did have Beyonce, I believe, if I remember correctly.
Is she from Texas? Oh, she's from
Texas. Yeah. She's from Houston. She's a Houston.
Okay. So do things like that. Right. I think that's the cool way to do it.
Well, and Minnesota, Maroon 5
was. They did a Prince
I think it was
tribute.
Maroon 5. They did a Prince tribute, but I mean that would have been perfect for Prince if he was still, you know, around then. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. But I think they try to make it somewhat local. If you're looking at Atlanta, though, the reason they didn't go with Outkast wasn't because they didn't want to, at least in my opinion. It's because Andre 3000's a goddamn lunatic.
No, but you could do better than Maroon 5 in Atlanta. Atlanta's like one of the best cultural cities in the country.
Yeah.
So much talent out of there. Maroon 5.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, they could have
Coldplay
absolutely.
Coldplay busy? Coldplay's already done it, I guess.
Coldplay's done it. The Who did it. The Who. I like The Who. I mean, U2 was obviously great. Paul McCartney
U2's
did it one year.
I mean, some of those older acts, is like Bruce Springsteen, like, it was what it was. It wasn't legendary. You knew what you were going to get. You got it. You were happy with it. You know,
Eric Clapton ever done it?
No, but he's controversial now. He's pretty controversial now.
What's the controversy?
It's some racist. He said some pretty racist stuff. Like, I actually, sometimes I think that stuff's overblown. He said some pretty racist stuff back in the day. I'll let you look it up. But
I'll look it up. That's
unfortunate. I think he's untouchable right now.
I'm a huge fan of his music. So.
And then finally, we got to get into the commercials, which once again sucked. Super Bowl commercials haven't been good in 10 years. Did you like any of them? Was there any?
I have a take on Super Bowl commercials. I don't pay attention to them during the game, and the reason is, if they're any good, well, number one, they play all the time after the Super Bowl. You'll be able to see them eventually anyway, sure. Number one. Number two, the best ones are going to be on Twitter. The best ones are going to be, you know, go viral in other mediums. So there's no point in having to, you know, keep your eyes glued to the television when the game isn't on. I like to use the commercial break to go through Twitter, check my phone, do all that stuff. So I like the first commercial, honestly, is probably my favorite, the M&M one.
The first commercial was for an M. Night Shyamalan movie, which was
weird. The second commercial. The first, that movie actually looks very interesting, though.
But you don't see horror movie commercials during a Super Bowl. Like, that was very out of place. The M&M one wasn't bad. I liked, and we've talked about this on this show. I've said it for a long time. Will Ferrell's second act is coming. And that wasn't bad, where he's trying to go to Sweden, he ends up in Norway, and the people he's with end up in Finland or whatever it was for electric cars. I thought that was funny. And he punches the globe.
That was funny. That was a funny concept. And I hope he has a second act, because he's
starting to. Well, that'd be a good way to kick it off. And then the other one I thought, and this, so that one will go viral. There was, at this point, because they're so, also, most of them are so bad. My favorite kind of Super Bowl commercial now is the ones that are so bad that they're funny. And those ones don't go viral or anything. But did you see the Jimmy John's one?
Oh, with Brad Garrett.
Yeah, and it's like, but he's like Scarface.
Yeah.
And they're throwing like, and it's, yeah, that was hilarious. Like, it was so bad.
It missed.
It made
missed
no sense. But it missed so much. it was like the 50 cent first pitch, right? If a guy misses a first pitch a little bit, you don't think much of it. But when you 50 cent a first pitch, like, it's so bad, it's funny, right? Like the movies that are we've talked about those at length, right? I couldn't help but laugh. It was so over the top ridiculous. It was like, they were like, well, we can't come up with anything good. So what if we come up with something so bad that it's memorable for being bad? And I respect that.
Yeah, and I'm a big Brad Garrett guy. I like, everybody loves Raymond. So it was sad to see. But, you know, at least he got paid. It wasn't good. It was a weird, clunky commercial. I didn't really get it. And I think they tried way too hard. So, but I like the take. So bad it's good. That one was just corny and weird and not a fan. But, I mean, Super Bowl commercials have just been horrendous the past few years. You go back, speaking of, you know, Tom Brady when he first started, I want to go back to the commercials when he was in the suit. Like, that commercial, that has to be circa, you know, 01 to 04, right?
I think it's actually earlier, but yeah.
Was it? I thought,
yeah, okay, I think that's a 90s thing.
Was it 90s? But that was a Super Bowl commercial.
But like
the Bud
Light had like two or three dominant commercials every year. Doritos had two or three dominant commercials every year. The car commercials were usually good. Do you remember the one? It was a Doritos one where there's two guys at the gym, and one guy's like, "Hey, I took these Doritos out of Todd's locker," and the other guy's like, "You shouldn't have done that. Todd's crazy about Doritos. Oh, he goes, yeah, how bad is it? He gets hit with the poison dart, right?"
Yeah.
That's a good one. There's the monster.com one with the guy punching the koala. I always remember that one.
The talking baby.
Oh, the talking baby. Oh, that was E-Trade, right?
E-Trade. That was a good one. What happened to E-Trade? Why aren't they taking advantage of this Robin Hood stuff, speaking of which?
Well, also remember the commercial with the monkeys?
There's
monkeys in suits, and they're holding like stock charts. It was the same concept as the E-Trade baby commercial.
It's talking monkeys instead of babies.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they weren't talking. You can look it up. It was a good one. But yeah, Super Bowl commercials, not the same anymore.
Yeah, unfortunately. One of these days it'll come back. There'll be a resurgence.
So let's close on this here, because and we'll get back to the actual football of it a little bit. But I touched on this a little bit earlier in the show, that, you know, people were calling this a battle of the goats and you know, big goat versus baby goat and all that. And I think people have forgotten why GOAT is the term it is. It's an acronym. Greatest of all time. And when we first started calling Tom Brady that, I don't know, it was probably around like 2013, 2014. I thought it was a really awesome nickname. It's unique. All that is great. But now, you know, a guy will throw for some journeyman will throw for 300 yards in an NFL game. And everyone's like, GOAT, right? Like, first off, GOAT used to be a bad thing. GOAT used to mean, like, if you were the GOAT of a moment, like, Bill Buckner was the GOAT of the 86 World Series, okay? Steve Bartman was the GOAT. Like GOAT was who you put the blame on. And I get that it shifted, but we need to stop throwing that term around because it's watering it down, and it's pissing me off. And I get it's taken on, you know, another level of meaning where it just sort of means, like, legend or whatever, as we talked about off the air. But I hate that. I hate that. It was a cool term. It was a unique term for Tom Brady. Stop calling Mahomes the GOAT when he hasn't done anything. Stop calling above average players GOATs when they retire. Like, I love Vince Carter. Very fun player to watch. You know, definitely a Hall of Famer. But when he retired, people were like, GOAT. And it's like, no, not the greatest of all time. If you want to refer to that one dunk contest and say he's the GOAT of the dunk contest, then you might have a case. But don't call Vince Carter a GOAT. He's very good.
Yeah.
Borderline Hall of Famer. Like, that's just been pissing me off all week.
I think that this is a problem with the English language, or at least Americans maybe. And we don't use words properly. And I think GOAT is starting to become a part of that. Like, unbelievable. Most things described as unbelievable are very believable. They
How
are
about,
believable.
Like, so, like, literal. You're talking about the literal.
Literally. Oh, yeah. It was literally horrible. Like, it's not most people don't use that word, or it's redundant, or, you know, awesome. Does something really, is it awe-inspiring? Is your jaw to the floor, like, fascinating? Is it fascinating? Is it, like, I don't know. I think they're, I had a teacher in college, a professor who used to always hammer this home. And it did stick with me a little bit, although I still make this mistake constantly. Use words the way they're meant to be used. Way too often, the people overuse words or exaggerate by using the wrong words. And I think GOAT has joined, is now a part of this issue. It's one person. One person is the greatest of all time. Or one team is the greatest of all time. You can't have multiple people in the same category be the greatest of all time. There's no tie here. There's one greatest of all time in football. It's Tom Brady. Patrick Mahomes is not it. So I agree with you. I think that this is a part of an epidemic of people misusing words all too consistently. So it's a problem. It's not going anywhere though. Maybe we need to have a campaign to stop it.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to do right here. You know, for the so many people that listen to this show, right? Like, and let's not start, you know, don't put anybody, we can talk about football here, but this could apply to anything. Don't put anybody in the GOAT conversation until they're at least 30. Just don't do it. Right. And this is kind of what we talked about at the beginning of the show. Mahomes, it's not to take away from the start he's had to his career. He has been great. But look at Cam Newton. 2015, won the MVP, one of the greatest seasons we saw, from maybe the greatest single season by a quarterback in that decade. It's either Mahomes in 18, Cam in 15, or Brady in 11. Those are the top three, and you can debate those, and that's a fair debate.
Or maybe Manning in, what was it, 14?
That team was loaded.
I still threw for 50 touchdowns.
Though. I guess. Yeah, right. If you want to throw Peyton in there, you can throw Peyton in there. The point being, had a great season. He was, he would have been 26, 27 at the time, I think, if that.
Yeah, about there.
And, you know, it made a lot of sense at the time to project and think forward that there was no reason to think that it was going to end. There was no reason to look at, you know, there was, but a lot of people weren't looking at that and said, this guy's going to keep playing like this. And he didn't. So let's, you know, as likely as it is that Mahomes could win four Super Bowls, it's just as likely he doesn't win another one. It's not easy to win a Super Bowl as good as you are. Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. It's not remotely close. And he hasn't even won a Super Bowl in half of his seasons. He is so far beyond everybody else. And he still wins the Super Bowl less than half the time. So let's not baby goat, blah, 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 this and that. Like, let's stop. It's fine to project. But, you know, people are already talking about, you know, the matchup between Brady and Trevor Lawrence in terms of historical context. First overall pick versus Tom Brady is cool. I'm not going to deny that. But let's not go that far.
Ridiculous. I'll also say this. People are, you know, they assume that Mahomes is the next Brady. They as if it's a foregone conclusion.
Right. That's not a thing. That's not because.
Yeah.
Well, beyond that, even if Mahomes is great, right? People at one point called Brady the next Montana. Now, if you compare Brady to Montana, that's an insult to Brady. You're underselling Brady. There is no, once a guy hits a certain level, there is no next. Yeah. There is no, Brady's so unique. If Mahomes does it, he's not going to do it like Brady did it. And let's keep this in mind, too. Tom Brady completely revolutionized the NFL. The NFL is a completely different game now than it was when Tom Brady entered the league. And Tom Brady is a large part of that. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady changed the NFL. Patrick Mahomes is succeeding in the context of the NFL that Tom Brady changed. Don't talk to me about GOAT until Patrick Mahomes changes the NFL. Okay? Don't call him the next Tom Brady until he changes the NFL. That's my that's part of my argument with Gretzky and Orr. And I'm not saying Mahomes is on either of their levels yet. But Wayne Gretzky entered the NFL and was the perfect fit for what the NFL was at the time, or entered the NHL and was the perfect fit for what the NHL was at the time. He came in and was the ideal player. Mm-hmm. Bobby Orr was beyond that. Bobby Orr was a player nobody had ever imagined, and he changed the game. Talk to me about play. When you talk about the greatest of all time, don't talk to me about players who were great for their era, who were exactly what you wanted. Players who are exactly what you want are nice. I'd rather have a player that I didn't even know I wanted. Talk to me about players that broke the mold, not fit it. Right now, Patrick Mahomes fits the mold better than anybody in the league. Has he broken the mold yet? He's getting there, but not quite.
And one more thing, and just to round off what I was saying, you look back, there's another team in the early part of last decade that went to back-to-back Super Bowls, won the first one, and then lost the second one, not in as in pretty awful fashion, but much closer than what we saw last night. And I think you had a lot of people, maybe they weren't as high up on Russell Wilson as people are on Patrick Mahomes now, and I think that's justified. But people thought Russell Wilson and that Seahawks team was going to go on a dynasty like we saw with the Patriots in the early part of the 2000s. And they went to the next Super Bowl. People were like, okay, they could win this. They can make this happen. They could do back-to-back. This will be incredible. This could be the start of the new dynasty. And they lost. And since then, they haven't been back. And you're coming off of a game in which, the Chiefs were in their second straight Super Bowl. They lost in bad fashion. And part of the reason was because they were outcoached. And you look at the skill players they have, and you look at the skill players the Seahawks had back then, and a lot of them were on the defensive side of the ball, obviously. But they lost a lot of that core. So Patrick Mahomes, it's not going to get easier for him to win in this league. Despite the fact that maybe he gets better in this area or that area, despite that, they're not going to have this roster, this cohesiveness, this structure on their organization forever. And, this was an opportunity for them to repeat. This is an opportunity for them to capitalize on the skill that they have right now, and they didn't. And no one knows when they're going to be back. No one knows if they're going to win another one. And no one knows what lies ahead for Patrick Mahomes. But he could very well end up like Russell Wilson instead of end up like Tom Brady. And I think you can make the argument that, obviously the Russell Wilson route is far more likely. So let's see what happens. And this isn't to minimize Patrick Mahomes, the player. I think he's phenomenal. I think he's one of the best players we've seen at that position. But people, I think, get ahead of themselves and forget how difficult it is to win in this league. And I think they put Mahomes on a pedestal when, one, it's a team sport, and two, the guy's 25 years old, 26. He's 25. We don't know what he's going to be in 5 years. We don't know what he's going to be in 10 years. So let's wait. Let's see. If I had to put my money on it, he's going to be closer to Russell Wilson than a Tom Brady, though.
I would agree. And look, I don't. There's nothing wrong with being Russell Wilson. If he ends up, he flirts for an MVP cup with an MVP a couple more times, he's a top three, top five quarterback in the league for the majority of his career. That's a Hall of Famer. Russell Wilson's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's going to go down as one of the best of his era. Aaron Rodgers, same thing, right? Won that Super Bowl early, and then it's kind of been struggle since, but he's constantly one of the best quarterbacks in football. Like, that's the route most of these guys go. That's what happens to most of these great quarterbacks, right? Montana won four, Aikman won three. But even the guys like, for the majority of the early era of the NFL, John Elway got two late. He got a couple, but he got them late. Dan Marino didn't win one. Like, that's what this was. The great quarterbacks were great individually for long strings of time, and they'd get one or two shots at a Super Bowl. That's what it was. Okay, we ran through the ridiculous Brady stats before. Like, that's why Mahomes isn't the next Brady, because it's not just about high point. It's about longevity and sustained success both at the individual and team level. And you just can't project that. You can't do it. So, Mahomes' peers right now are probably – his closest peers probably are Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, I'd say. Maybe Drew Brees a little bit. But that's the category Mahomes is in, much more than Brady. Brady, I don't even know that Brady's in Michael Jordan's category. I said this last night. I don't think there's an argument anymore. And individual sports are a little different. Like, I've seen people throw out Serena Williams, Tiger Woods. Let's talk about physical sports, okay? Let's talk about real, like physical. I don't know that Brady has a contemporary in North American team sports. I don't know that it's Jordan. I don't know that it's Hank Aaron. I don't know that it's Barry Bonds. Like, none of those guys had the sustained individual and team success. If you want to truly find an athlete comparison for Tom Brady, I think you have to go back to like ancient Greece, Leonidas of Rhodes. Like, that's Brady's contemporary at this point, right? Phelps won all those medals, but who's he? I'll go to individual sports. Phelps won all those medals. Who's he swimming against, really?
Ryan Lochte.
Who's he swimming against? No, but he's not swimming against Lochte. They're in the. Did they go against each other?
Maybe. I don't know. But I get your point, though. LeBron James takes up swimming. He's the best swimmer in the world. And the competition athletically does not even compare to that. Are there right?
Brady's facing 31 other teams that are in theory have the, you know, they train the same way. They have the same access to assets.
Mm-hmm.
Are there really 31 other swimmers in the world that can say they have the same base training as Michael Phelps?
No.
Probably not. You know, Serena Williams is just Serena Venus Williams. It's a different level. Okay. Tennis isn't, it's not what football is. If you want to throw Tiger Woods in there, because Tiger Woods did have some elite competition, and there is, he did get that Masters 2 years ago, but even still, there was a huge dip.
Yeah.
There's the sustained success. Like if the Williams.
Well, he also hasn't even caught up with Jack Nicklaus. So right, like exactly. If he's not even the top statistically in his own sport, you can't say that he's better than Tom Brady.
If the Williams sisters are still winning Grand Slams in their 50s, we can talk about it. When Phelps does a sport that has, you know, more access to those who are competing in it. And look, swimming has more access than football. Football's only played in the U.S., but it's not football.
I also, again, with Serena Williams, how many women are playing tennis instead of playing soccer or playing basketball? Like, where are right. the best athletes for women? You know, where do they gravitate towards? And that's not to say that Serena Williams wouldn't be dominant no matter what, but that is to say that the competition in that sport relative to sports like football, you know, which attracts the top tier athletes in this country, it's objectively, it seems to be better. And then there's the longevity aspect of it. I roll my eyes when people bring up Serena Williams or Michael Phelps when talking about, oh, they're more dominant athletes all time than Tom Brady. I mean, it's baloney. It's baloney, if you ask me. Brady is the best of all time. You know, people can bring up Bill Russell, but again, competition. You had 14 teams in the NBA back when he played. So
guys with day jobs.
Yeah, you had Tommy Heinsohn sold life insurance in the offseason, and he was younger than Russell. So I just don't I hate these arguments when people try to go like back to eras in which, you know, it's not even close to competition level compared to today, or individualistic sports in which the competition level is not nearly as high, given the fact that the best athletes are not playing those sports. If LeBron James starts swimming at the age of 3, And dedicates his life to it, guess what? He's better than Michael Phelps at swimming. And you can say that for a lot of other sports, too.
Oh, no, I'd put LeBron ahead of Phelps if we're talking about greatest individual athletes.
Oh, yeah, in general. Like, in general, just for basketball, yeah, 100%. I think you would. Again, I think of great athletes. Greg Louganis isn't the person coming to mind.
I don't even know that I'm talking about great athletes as much as I'm just talking about like not athletes in terms of athleticism. I'm talking about like in terms of accomplished winners, right?
Yeah. Like, well, it's competition. The most successful competitors of all time. Who are they?
Right.
And I guess you can look at just wins and losses and championships and medals and whatnot, but you have to factor in everything. And when you factor in everything, it's Tom Brady.
And look, I'll say that like, Phelps went on a run, but there are other swimmers who had went on runs. None as big as him, but it's a sport where you can go on a run. Serena Williams, she went on a run. Other tennis greats have gone on runs. You didn't run Super Bowls like this. Again, Montana's 4 was thought to be a record that would never be broken. And now that's a fraction of what Brady's done. There were no runs, okay, in football before Brady. Yeah. These other sports had runs. The Yankees won how many freaking World Series with Babe Ruth? Like, that happened. That was a thing. There's no runs like this in the sport of football. It's the hardest sport to repeat.
Yeah.
And not that he's necessarily repeated a bunch, but he's constantly there.
It's every other year since what, 2014? He's won a Super Bowl. I mean, that's incredible.
Odd years. But you want to talk about the San Francisco Giants in odd years. Brady's odd years. He isn't.
Except he has one more. They got 3. He got 4 within the
right. Exactly. Other. He hasn't lost a Super Bowl. He hasn't not won a Super Bowl in an even number of years since 2012. I didn't think about that. That's insane.
It's crazy.
All right. We'll leave it there because we're pushing for an hour, and I know we could do this for an hour more. So we'll close it up with that. I do want to get into some of the NFL trade stuff, but maybe we'll get into that next week when there's some more clarity on it. We'll get into some basketball, some hockey as well. Obviously, some interesting things going on in the NBA right now with COVID and the All-Star game and all of that. So for all of that, make sure you check back for our next episode. Follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. Check us out online at clnsmedia.com under the podcast tab. Until the next one, for Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.